This is straight out of Crumpton with your host, Greg Crumpton.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Straight Out of Crumpton. I'm Gabby Barr, and I'm joined by Mr. Greg Crumpton. Greg, how are you today?
I am doing great, Gabby. I feel really good today. I don't know what's going on in the world, but it's like all the stars are lined up. I had a little situation this morning, dealt with it, kind of got that hurdle moved on. The guys picked the car up for service, so life's good. How about you?
I am doing well. It's Tuesday, another fun day to, you know, hop on a good podcast and, you know, learn about someone else new in the world and what they do and what's, you know, what makes them tick. So I'm ready for it.
Me too. We got a good guest today. I've been following this gent for a little while now. I just came to realize we're really not far from each other physically, probably 45 miles. So I guess I'm going to have to get up there and either buy his lunch or let him buy mine. But looking forward to a good conversation. So kick us off with this thing and let's go. Let's have a little fun with it.
Absolutely. Well, as Greg was saying, we have a very exciting guest today. It is Dallas Burnett. He is the founder of Think, Move, Thrive. He helps companies with coaching and implementing that into their cultures. Dallas, how are you doing today?
Man, I am so glad to be a part of the show today, man. And especially since Greg is having such a good day, I just feel like I'm glad to be a part of it.
I've never met anyone, I don't think, who had three verbs in the name of their company. So you're a first. Think, move, thrive. I love it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We like to be different, stand out.
You know, we were talking just a little bit before we hit record, and we share some commonality in our backgrounds as far as the company you worked for before was a subcontractor that some of my companies in the past have used, water balance, air balance, what have you. So it's always cool to kind of catch up and see the different routes people take. And before we get going too deep, because I'm so freaking excited, unfortunately, like anything, I like to dive into the deep end of the pool before I kind of get my toes wet. Why don't you get our toes wet? Give us a little bit of history about you, how you came to be Think, Moving, and Thriving. Then we'll jump in. So, but I'd love to hear a little bit.
So I am originally from the upstate of South Carolina, got married and decided that for a career move, we decided to go to Atlanta of all things. And so we spent some time in Atlanta and just experiencing that city and enjoyed it. Ultimately had the experience. My background is very diverse as it relates to business. I've just been in at least a dozen industries and it's all been great. It's just been a fascinating journey. I've worked for family-owned businesses. I've worked for multi-billion-dollar companies. I've been in, you know, in startups with venture funding and startups with bootstraps. And you just see all these different aspects of business and the struggles and the trials. And one of the things that I realized, and I got to my mid-30s and realized that I was a junkie on strategy. I just loved strategy. I couldn't eat enough of that in my 30s. And then I got to my mid-30s and started in some of these startups and started leading people. And I realized it doesn't matter how good a strategy I have, if I can't move people and I can't get them to align around that strategy, it just doesn't work. Or if it does work, it's not going to work as good as I can get alignment around people. So then I just really kind of went headlong into developing people, leading people, what that looks like. And that's really what the last almost 10 years has been all about for me.
Interesting route. I too served time in Atlanta. I grew up there and lived there for 35 years. So I think you having come through that as an adult without any battle wounds is remarkable these days.
I've got stories of the 285 on Friday night and sitting there for about 3 hours. So I definitely have stories. I got battle scars, so I understand.
Anybody who has studied the road sign that says Ashford Dunwoody Road is a real warrior. And if you know, you know.
If you know, you know.
That's really interesting in that you've worked in so many different industries and the breadth of the companies as far as their size is really important to me, because what it tells me is what I think I've grown to realize is it doesn't matter how big you are, how much money you have, without the people pushing the big heavy stone up the hill, it doesn't matter. You know, because it takes folks. And we spend a lot of time here on the podcast talking about skilled trades workers and the lack of skilled trades workers and trying to recruit and attract and retain and create awareness and all the things that go with what people carry in tools for a career. In fact, last week I was in Miami, actually Homestead, which I was blown away by because the last time I was in Homestead, it looked like a freaking desert because it was right after the last hurricane and there wasn't a freaking piece of greenery anywhere. But now I think 10 years removed, I go back and it's like lush and green again. So that was kind of cool to see that revitalization of what nature had done. But anyway, we're talking about getting, and we were at a factory where they make air conditioning equipment. And we were talking about how you help instill, polish, nurture, coach, guide, love, and all those things that it takes you do with people, not to people, to help them advance, help them understand the mission, and help them become passionate about the overall thing you're trying to accomplish. And for these guys that's making air conditioning equipment, the guys I was with were some of my coworkers. And, you know, for us, it's delivering good service, but it's still a matter of bringing people along for the journey. You've got two topics that I find really interesting. You've got several things you talk about in your book and on the podcast as well that you do. And we're going to give you time to plug that here at the end. But two things that really pop for me, delegation, superstars, and active coaching. I think that those two things for me are, I'm inquisitive about both because I think you have to have the ability to delegate. I think you have to have the ability to be delegated unto. And I think everybody has to coach in a 360 degree environment. We have to coach up, we have to coach down, we have to coach sideways. And then the reciprocal of that is we have to be coachable in those same directions. So tell us a little bit your words on those two topics, because I only know them how I read them.
So first of all, we'll definitely talk about those two topics. And I want you to remind me at the end, after we get through with those, I want to come back to talking about that retaining employees and how do we get people to essentially believe and how do we get them to row the boat in the same direction and how do we inspire them? Because that is a lot of what the latest book that we just had come out, Lift, is unpacking, and it's tactical. It's not theoretical. So we'll come back to that because I got some really good tools for your listeners and really good things for them to think about as it relates to that. But first, let's jump into delegation. And it's such a large topic that is overlooked a lot. And it's overlooked because we get busy. And the reason we get busy is because we have so many urgent things going on around us. There's fires that we've got to put out. There's problems that we've got to solve. And one of the things that we just tend to forget to do is look at why are we doing what we're doing and how can we do it better? And a lot of that has to do with focus. And so when we think about delegation, what we're really talking about, especially if we're just thinking about how do I know what to delegate? Because that's a really big question for people to ask sometimes. And there's a whole framework of understanding how and what to delegate off your plate. But one of the things that we're asking and the questions that we're trying to solve for when we talk about delegation is, what is it that I want to focus on? What is it that me as a leader or as a technician, in any industry, what is it that I need to focus on to be successful? I was talking to a PGA coach recently, and he said, you know, every job usually has two or three things that you need to be like world class at to be good at that job. And so if you know those two or three things, then a lot of the other stuff that you work on is static. And maybe some of the other stuff that you work on, someone else would be better at it. So one of the things that we want to look at is our team. Like, for example, if you're just not IT savvy, then one of the things you need to be delegating is something related to IT to someone that's just better at it, that's just faster. You know, if I'm not a good graphic designer, I need to go get a graphic designer versus trying to say, oh, I'm going to do this all myself. I need to go find somebody that's better at it. They're going to do it faster. They're going to do it better than me. However, as a leader, sometimes we get in trouble. And this is, I know you've seen this. If you've been in business any amount of time, it's a lot of pain. This is where the pain comes in delegation. This is why it's done less than it should be. And that is this, and you've probably seen it. I have a problem I need to solve, and I've decided I'm going to delegate this. This is this task that I'm not good at. It's causing me stress and anxiety. This other person I've identified, they can handle it. And so I say, here, this is now your responsibility. And usually the first thing that happens is that they go along for a little bit under the radar and then they fail. And then I get freaked out. I'm like, oh, I can't have balls dropping. I got to make sure everything's right. And so I do something really bad, and that is just go pull it back and say, well, if you need anything good done, you have to do it yourself. And so you just pull that back. You've got that again, plus everything else that you filled in the gap while you had delegated off first. So now you're even more stressed than you were, and you're trying to clean up the mess, and you just get in this cycle. And when you see businesses, and we talked about different sizes and companies, a lot of times you'll see these plateaus at different levels. And you'll see a plateau about $1 million, because business is about $1 million. That's one dude doing his thing, and that's what he's doing. You see about five. That's exactly right. You'll see that five, and you've got maybe a couple project managers. That's about as much as you can manage. You'll see another one around 10 and maybe 25. And so you see these stratas, and a lot of times it's because we either don't have the systems and processes in place or we haven't got the ability to delegate. And so what we have is a system that we call caveman delegation. We teach this as part of our workshops and different trainings that we do and summits that we do.
You're talking to the right audience.
So here's what you have to do. This is,
right,
this
everybody, is a, pick your knuckles up. Here we go.
Yeah. Pick your knuckles up, get ready, get your pens out, you know, and let's go. So this is how you delegate correctly so that you can do it one and done. We can't delegate and set it and forget it. Like, this is not the commercial with the rotisserie chicken, right? We've got to be a part of the process. And so when we engage in the process, if we do it correctly, we can eventually separate and transfer that responsibility to somebody successful. And this is how it goes. You got to think like a caveman. And so a caveman says, me do. And that's you in your current state. You are doing this activity, me do. And you're doing all of it all the time. And so now the next step is we're going to do me do, you watch. Me do, you watch. I'm going to take somebody and I'm just going to let them see. It may be that I'm just CCing them on emails. It may be that I'm letting them ride in my truck, a certain meeting, sit in the meeting in the back of the room. Don't say anything. Just watch. I may debrief with them after that, whatever it is. And then it's you do, me watch. You do, me watch. So me do, you watch, you do, me watch. All right. This is where I'm giving them their first kind of taste of responsibility. And this is where I am not letting go of the reins. I'm not saying you're totally responsible. I'm a hawk. I'm watching. I'm seeing what's going on. How are they handling it? You're responding to this customer now. You're responding on this project communication now. And I'm watching. How are you doing it? Okay, you said this. That was a little bit, let's work on that. Let's work on your delivery a little bit. Or you took too long to reply. Or whatever it is. You know, I'm watching. And I'm shaping. And I'm encouraging. And I'm reminding. And all these things. I can say, okay, you do. But it's not just you do. It's you do up to. So you do up to. What does that mean? You do up to means this. I'm not conferring, especially if I'm the ultimate accountability for whatever it is that they're responsible for. I may still want to be involved, but only on things that I feel like are outside of what I've already trained them on. For example, if I'm training an estimator, they may be great at a certain type of system or a certain process or a certain project type. I'm going to say, okay, you've got the reins now. You have full control of everything in this estimation. Whatever comes across your desk, you can do up to $10,000. Up to $50,000, up to it outside of this type of unit or this type of process. Now I've put some boundaries on them, and that is a good way because then it gives them clarity that they have freedom to move, which is great because now they feel like they have some autonomy in their job and they can do the job without having a hawk micromanage their activity. And it gives me, as the delegator, some peace to know that if there's anything that happens, because as the delegator, I'm going to lose sleep at night because I'm like, what if they screw this up? What if they screw this up? What is it? Well, I know because we've practiced in you do me watch. I know what they're not going to screw up because we've got some good track record. We've laid some good track on that. So I don't have to. And I know that if it's outside of that boundary, they're going to talk to me and we can work through that, which is just going to make them better in the long run. So I think when people, you know, get into delegation, they start unpacking it, they get overwhelmed. Sometimes people will over-delegate and step away. They do the set it and forget it approach. And that's a recipe for disaster. And then they just tell everybody that they don't know what they're doing. Really, you need to take that on yourself as personal responsibility so that you can be successful. Because we're only good delegators if the delegation itself is a success. That means we're not a good delegator. I would say take that responsibility on yourself first. If you've delegated something to a subordinate and or a team member and they are failing at it, then first we need to look at ourselves in the mirror and say, did we do everything we could to set them up for success in the process of delegation, or did we just throw them to the sharks? And so, yeah, that's our system. Caveman delegation. It's easy. Me do, you watch. You watch, You do me watch and you do up too. If you get that, you get it right.
No, I think that's good. I really do. I'm backing up a bit mentally to the actual task to be delegated. Unfortunately, some people only delegate turds. They don't delegate good stuff. If you're on the receiving end of a turd 24/7 by your boss, eventually you're going to give up. If it's dark and it's stinky and it's dank and, you know, damp and all that stuff that goes with being a mushroom, but you're expected to deliver, it's really difficult until you get some victories under your belt. And you have to have success. Think about it like this. If you're a door-to-door encyclopedia saleswoman, Gabby, which what that means is people actually went to houses and knocked on the doors and tried to sell encyclopedias. So I have to tell these kids this stuff. If that person knocks on 20 doors and always gets a no, they're going to give up. They got to have a victory. Same way with delegation. If you're delegating turds 24/7, you're setting that person up for failure, in my opinion, regardless of how good you are at the delegation task. You have to be realistic at what you're giving off to. Is that fair, Dallas?
I think that's not only fair. I think it gets it to the heart of something very important. If you're listening to this show, I know this show talks a lot about relationships and leadership and how it affects, you know, home and at work. And here's what I would say. Leaders, great leaders, look through a lens that's like this. I am here to build the next me. And if I can do that at the next level or maybe even two levels down, I am a successful leader. And to do that, I can't just throw, like you said, turds at everybody downstream. I've got to find out some of the most important. In fact, I want to give some real all-star projects out to other people so that they can step up. Here's the dynamic. Poor leaders live with this mindset. If I give those out and they do well, I'm done for. Or they will excel over me. And I was having this conversation the other day with someone that had been a rising star in the company. And we're talking about, you know, another person that is struggling. It's a mindset thing. It is not scarcity. And honestly, you're not ready for the next level if you can't duplicate yourself at the current level. If you can duplicate yourself at the current level, whatever that is, whether you're a project manager, an ops manager, if you're in hospitality, if you're in the restaurant business, if you can duplicate yourself, what that shows is it's A, you're great at delegating because you just delegated your whole job description to somebody else. But to do that, you've got to understand it inherently to a finite level and then be able to communicate that. And if you understand it at that level of granularity and then can inspire someone and find a good fit to do that. Oh man, I can tell you this, the sky's the limit because it doesn't matter what position you are, whatever position is next, people are going to be looking at you to fill that to do it again and again and again and again.
You're not going to get plucked to go up by your leadership or your corporate team or whomever if they're worried about the vacuum that's going to be created if they pull you out. You've got to have that person on deck and that person in the hole, as a baseball term, one level back, two levels back, whatever, you got to have that bench built. And, you know, we do that. I think we do a pretty good job at my company, Service Logic, of doing that. And we're seeing the fruit of that right now, Dallas. And I've talked a little bit about this. We've got a plethora of young people coming into our president's roles that have been VPs, ops folks, whatever title they held before. But our existing leadership has done a great job of building their replacement. You know, to me, that's the ultimate. I mean, like, you've reached the crowning moment in your career when you can leave the business continues to prosper under different leadership, and it's going to be different. We're not creating Dolly the sheep here. We're not cloning people. We're carrying the same values, the same core values, but everyone's going to have their own twist and their own flavor on it, which is great. That's how you keep companies moving. It's really fun because we have 53 operating companies right now. Seeing this cohort of younger presidents coming in right now is so freaking cool to me. I've known the guys who have been running the companies, and they're my peers. They're my age group who are retiring out. And to see these 40-year-olds coming in, 50-year-olds coming in, taking a successful business, sprinkling their seasoning on it, and going again for the next run is so cool to watch.
It is. And I think that speaks a lot to the culture that you're trying to create and that open mindset and an opportunistic mindset and the opposite of scarcity. I think that also when you look at that, the abilities and the things that it opens up for you, if you can grasp that mindset and actually move into it, because just you can't, this is not one of those things you can fake. You can't, this is not a concept where you can be like, yeah, that sounds good. And then you go back and you're operating in scarcity. You truly have to have that mindset and move in that direction. But if you can, let's say that somebody's still paranoid about it. Let's say you've got some naysayers out there. I'm just afraid that if I train somebody else up to do this work, that I'll be replaced and somebody will take my job and then I'll lose my job. Well, A, if the worst case scenario happens, you've got a skill that's transferable to any industry, any job, anywhere. And I can guarantee you that it's very, very sought after. Number two, let's say there's not a position up over you somewhere where you're going to move into anytime. You've just made your life easier because you've got a lot of people that's sharing the load and the burden. And now you've got plenty of time to go do whatever it is you want to do. And so whether that's innovate in some other area of the company or whether that's take on new responsibilities or whether that's start a hobby, it doesn't matter. You have successfully, you know, kind of duplicated yourself. And I think that's really done with that mindset and then having a skill of delegation.
I think in my history has told me that the skilled trades are horrible about that because there was a lot of craftsmen back in the day who were fearful of young upcoming apprentice types taking their job, quote unquote. I think we're moving away from that to a great degree, but I'm not, and I can't speak to this because I'm not this person, but I don't know if non-skilled, more the managerial engineering side of the business suffered from that. You may know that from your time at the Balance Company. Is that a common trait or is that a tool carrying curse?
I think that the idea of having a craftsman mindset, it's a double-edged sword. We have to maintain that craftsman mindset because the aspects of it that are good are it's this pursuit of excellence. We're doing the job and the work for its own sake. We want to do this well. It was like Steve Jobs' dad used to put in cabinets and he'd paint the back of the cabinets. And they're like, why are you going to do that? Nobody's going to see the backs. And he's like, I know what it looks like on the back. I saw it. And he wanted, that was just his signature thing. I want it to be right front, back, even when nobody's seeing. So that idea of a craftsman mindset is fantastic. I think where some people take it too far, the pendulum swings too far, is exactly what you said. I have this knowledge and this information. I want to keep it to myself. I don't want to share it. We're operating in different structures now. So, you know, back in the day, you had a blacksmith. He was at a blacksmith shop and it was one blacksmith in the town and he had an apprentice. And then when he got older, the apprentice took over and it's just like this kind of thing. And now we're seeing so much scale and so much ability to increase productivity when we come together. Now all the blacksmiths all over the world can share their knowledge on social media and get in a blacksmith group and be better, faster, stronger at blacksmithing all over the world, you know, at the same time. And so you're starting to see these networks collide. And I think some of the challenges for organizations is how do we maintain this craftsman mindset, but then bring people that are technical in nature, maybe their upbringing is more technical, hands-on, maybe it's engineering, maybe it's medicine, maybe it's law, whatever that technical is, and then bring them in to help them see that when you move over people, your role is different. Especially if you're coming from a technical background. So the craftsman mindset then has to shift to not just apply with work with your hands, but it applies to your work with people. And I think that's the biggest breakdown that I saw in all the companies I've worked with is that you have the technical drivers and the producers, and then they are good at what they do, and then they get promoted over four people. And so you've got an engineer, he's a great engineer, he does good design, no training, and now you're over 400.
Our industry, historically, we take really good craftsmen, they become the service manager. So Friday, they're in the truck running a service call. Monday, they're the service manager. They didn't get really, really gifted over the weekend at leading people. Our companies, plural, have done a good job of trying to figure out we've got to help start that people side of the process way earlier than we have historically, which was Monday when he started the job, because they're all male. So I can say he, unfortunately. You know, we teach in trade schools and apprenticeship schools, we teach thermodynamics and we teach welding and we teach all this stuff that is so germane to the craft. We are beginning to change, but historically we haven't offered how to communicate with Dallas, how to communicate with Gabby. Totally different vocabularies, different everything. I'm supposed to take my message and give it to both of you. I can't give you the same message. Even if the outcome needs to be the same, because you're both going to hear it differently. So we're starting to get that. Gabby's probably like, Jesus, here we go again on this topic. But it's really important to me, because we are so far behind the eight ball of getting our folks and the trades people friendly in a communicative kind of way and a leadership kind of way. So it's important. It's equivalent to in medicine, and I've talked to some of my physician friends, and they are actually coached on how to work on their bedside manner. We don't do that in our trade. We send people into buildings and homes and hospitals and everywhere else as raw-ass technicians who are really good at fixing equipment. We're having to learn communication skills on the fly. A prime example, last night, I went to a restaurant, my wife and I with friends. The friends had a show to go to at 7. We did not go to the show. We met them at 5:30. Upon sitting down, we told the waiter, we have a 7 o'clock deadline. These folks have got to walk out of here at 7. At 5 till 7, we still didn't have our meal. And the gentleman who we were with was able to express his displeasure with several people. And the reaction of the manager was appalling, because we all looked at each other like, really? That just happened here and we're paying this bill. So anyway, it's not just air conditioning people who aren't getting the human training. So part of your coaching and part of your delegation process, to me, when I think about the components and the composition of those topics, has got to be that human interaction.
And I think that's a great place to talk a little bit about the other thing that you mentioned, which was what we call active coaching. To your point, what we've done is we've specialized a lot of tasks, and whether that's in trade school, whether that's in college, whatever it is, we're specializing technical tasks, but we haven't specialized in the human interaction and we don't train on that. And the other thing that we've done on top of that, which is all true, I think, is that since 2010 or 2008, whenever Facebook was loaded onto phones, whatever year that was, back in 2008, 2010, whenever that hit, what we've done is we've moved to very, very much younger generations have moved very much to digital conversation and communication. And so that takes out the personal element in another step. It just puts it that much further back. That's not their fault. We're the ones that made it and gave it to them. That's no shade on any young person out there. I'm saying that is a reality that we have as organizations have to face, to say, how can we improve this? Because not only are we teaching them technical skills, they don't have in their social spheres as much time to practice just interacting, because it's a lot more digital. And then throw on top of that COVID, it just gets really messy. And so one of the things that, and you talked about being in a very male organization, I've had that experience as well. And leading males is very interesting. They're so male. And that some of that is like very predictable, because you can have a great company and a great team that's very technically proficient, very dysfunctional. So it's surviving, but it's not thriving. And they may have a valuable service that only they can offer, but they're not thriving. And so one of the things that dudes do a really good job of is grunting at each other. And they don't do a good job of talking sometimes, but they do a good job of grunting. And so what that ends up doing is just creating a lot of friction and a lot of grind. And we don't really know why. We just, some dudes we connect with, some dudes we don't. We just grind on each other. And so we sometimes show up with a bad attitude because we don't want to work with this dude or that dude. So one of the things that we had to do was come up with a system, because, if you want to go and hire an executive coach for the CEO or the president or the vice president or directors, go get you one. That's great. That's fine. A lot of companies can do that. But what we found is everybody needs that one-on-one personal, holding them accountable, listening to them, helping them develop and grow. And yet companies miss it, because we do a lot of companies, and I've been in a lot of different industries, and it's across the board. It's an epidemic across the board. It's not related to just the tech industry, service industry, anything. It's everywhere. It's like you said, on Friday, you're a technician. On Monday, you're the manager. And the transition is very little. So what we have to do is be able to engage in coaching and development. And we want to push that all the way down through the organization. Now, when I say active coaching, I mean that most of the time you engage, many times you'll engage in coaching someone when they screw up, right? okay, I just delegated this, or you have this responsibility on your roles and responsibilities. You just messed up, and I'm going to tell you how you messed up. I'm going to tell you how to do it better, right? And that's okay, fair enough, especially when safety is concerned. You got to be very quick and very direct and get it done. But if that's the only time that you coach, it's very transactional. It's not relational. It's very reactive. So most people skill coach reactively. They know what's coming. And so what we want to do, and this is why we call it active coaching, is we want to take a proactive approach to coaching. That means regardless of what you're doing, regardless of your assignment, regardless if you've had a good week or a bad week, me and you, we're going to sit down on a regular basis consistently, and we're going to engage in a coaching and development process. Now, that is kind of the crux of what we did. We launched this inside the company, and we had some incredible, I mean, just insane results, because we developed a system that we could push down at every level. So we did not go outside. We did not get a bunch of executive coaches. We took our technical managers and we turned them into leader coaches. And it's not just a coach and it's not just a leader. It is its own thing that's a leader coach. And so that system was 6 questions. Because, you know, what I found out was that if you go up to a guy that's just been trained technically and you say, I want you to go have a meaningful conversation with this dude that you don't know that just hired onto your team. I need you to go out to lunch and have a meaningful conversation, really coach him up, develop him up. Unless that person's been trained on how to do that, what are they going to do? They're going to be like, okay. And they're going to talk about football at lunch. And go, what'd you do? Oh, yeah, that's good. What we need to do is we need to give people a scaffold that they can fall back on, a system, an approach that they can fall back on. And so you know that there's a baseline, and then we can test on that baseline. We can train on that baseline that's really easy that anybody can do. And then they can engage in that scaffolding process and feel more competent and gain confidence the more they do it. And so that is what we feel like active coaching would be, is consistent engagement in coaching and development. Now, we took that system that we developed for that company and turned it into an app. It's called the One-on-One Coaching System app. And that's what it's for. It's just 6 questions once a month. 3 are always different. 3 are always the same. But essentially that one-on-one coaching system, what we found valuable about it is that it generated monthly feedback. And the biggest thing it did was it helped our technical leaders, managers, become leader coaches, because they listened once, at least once a month. They just sat across somebody and gave them 20 minutes of their time and listened. It doesn't have to always be about, you know, what job or project you're managing. I mean, one of the questions is, what's the most important thing we can talk about today? You would be absolutely shocked when you ask that question, what happens? And sometimes nothing happens. They go, nothing. I think I'm good. And other times they go, hey, you know, me and my wife, we had it out this weekend. I don't think we're going to make it. And then other times they go, hey, you know, you told me you would get me that technical manual so I could take that exam, and you didn't do it. So where's my manual? Just giving people space, number one, to reflect. I mean, the first guy that sat through the demo, this is one of my favorite stories. This is a bigger story, but I don't want everybody to think that coaching has to be these ridiculous mountaintop experiences, because that's not what it's about. It's really about micro movements. It's, I'm going to move you a little bit at a time at a day, every day, a little bit, a little bit. And that's what the system's all about. But the first guy that sat through the demo, he goes and listen, he wasn't even getting it. He just watched me demo it to his ops manager. He said, okay, he leaves total flat. I just was like, well, this is going nowhere. This guy doesn't even think. He goes home. He comes back Monday and says, I want to make a commitment for my one-on-one. Oh, what is it? I quit smoking. You what? Yeah, I quit smoking this weekend. Why? Well, I got to thinking about the questions that you asked, and I thought this, and I thought that, and I thought this. And he goes, yeah, I'm having a baby. It's time to quit. He was smoking for like 15 years. That was like 3 or 4 years ago. He hadn't touched it since. It was cold turkey. No nick patch, nothing. He just woke up one day and was like, I'm not a smoker. Now, I'm not Tony Robbins, and this ain't a Tony Robbins system by any means. But what it is he was a powder keg, and he needed space to think. And we asked some questions that he needed to get some answers to. And a lot of people are going through and they're binging on Netflix at night, and they got 1,000 emails every day. They're not thinking about some important things. So when you give somebody 5 or 10 minutes just to sit and think, it's incredible. I mean, we've had managers that ask somebody, and one guy was his subordinate, thought he was mad at him. He wasn't mad at him. He just thought he was mad at him. And he told him, and then, what's the most important thing we can talk about today? I think you're mad at me. Really? Why's that? Well, these reasons. I'm not mad. Well, then when he says he's not mad, the guy's, oh, really? Well, I got this really great idea. He'd been sitting on the idea for like 3 months. That idea was rolled out company-wide all across the Southeast 3 months later. And it was just a little bit of dissonance and a little bit of tension that kept that idea from coming out. So what we want to do is just open up those channels. So active coaching to me is being able to engage one-on-one with individuals on your team consistently and give them space to think, give them an ear. listen to them, and now I'm getting feedback. And then I can also coach, so I can engage in that as well. And I can say, how are you doing on your goal? I can hold them accountable. They're going to make commitments, and part of the system, they make a commitment every month. How are you going to get 1% better this month? You might be watching a YouTube video, how to do Microsoft Teams or something, but it doesn't matter. It's just 1%. And so that's active coaching.
It's so freaking awesome. I'm working with a fellow right now, and we met last Friday. We had basically, I said, what do you want to do in 2024, both personally and professionally? The questions were benign and easy, but the answers were really, really awesome. It's giving people that pause to get their thoughts collected and say, okay, this dude actually wants me to answer this question, and he's not just looking for a BS, hey, how you doing kind of answer. This is a genuine conversation. Active coaching, I got to give you my take on it. And I've thought about this a million times, and I've told myself, quit exaggerating a million times. Get it? So I have often thought that a basketball coach is the ultimate coach because he's got five players, she's got five players, both sides of the court. And in real time, they can give feedback, positive, negative, forward-looking, and regressive of what's happening on the court. And when I think about your words, active coaching, to me, that's a basketball coach, because, or maybe hockey if you live up above the Mason-Dixon. You're seeing what's developing in front of you as a coach, just like we do at work or at home with your kids or whatever. And you're able to give, hey, Sally, Marge is open in the corner for a three-pointer. Pass her the ball. And we're helping because maybe she couldn't see that the lady was open and ready to receive the ball because she had a blinder up. Maybe somebody was blocking her. Here's this beautiful soul standing over there with her arms up waiting on the ball. We get that same way at work. We have these unintentional blinders on due to every freaking thing. I got 1,927 things going on with windows opening and everything else on all these screens. This one little thing I could focus on, and I couldn't see it because I've had this other blockage. But if I have a coach there, I got coach in one ear, my teammates in the other. Now I can pass that ball with precision because I know she's open.
I love that metaphor. Let's run with that, because like what passive coaching looks like in business is you walk into the stadium, the clock starts and you go, okay, guys, I'm going to my office. Bring me the score at the end of the game and I expect it to be a win. That's passive coaching. And then if you don't win, well, why didn't you win? Why didn't you win? Why didn't you do this? And it's like, well, let's get more involved. The other thing is that...
Hold on. Unless you're Bill Belichick. Bill, how come you didn't win today? The other team scored more points.
Yeah, right. John Wooden is one of my favorite coaches of any coach. And so the basketball analogy is great. But I love how you said it wasn't that you were micromanaging the player. And I loved how you pointed that out. You're letting them play, but you're seeing them as they are. And you're saying there's some gaps in awareness. That's what you just pointed out that they focused on. They've got their back turned. There's a player open behind them. They don't know it. And I'm there to help them. What you described is not the picture of a micromanager. It's not the picture of somebody that's nitpicking somebody all the way down the court on how they dribble and turn this way and turn that way. What you're doing is you're partnering with that person and you're seeing them for who they are. You're listening to their feedback. You're watching them perform. And then you're offering constructive counsel. And that is a leader coach. You're leading people. You know, when you have someone outside the organization, and I'm a big fan of executive coaches and all that. Fantastic. It's great. They're very valuable in their service. And so, but a lot of times they will say, what do you want to accomplish? And they will help you accomplish. And that's why we're very specific in saying we create leader coaches, because a leader is different from a coach in the sense that they have a vision and they're saying, this is where we're going. And I need your help to get there. And they're seeing the people and saying, this is how I see you do that. Now, it's a conversation. Right. But a coach is going to say, OK, well, how are we going to develop you? Well, we need both. We need leaders and coaches. And that tends to be the same individual in successful organizations with strong cultures.
A ton of great information today, my man. It's just fun to hear how we can grow. And to your point, it doesn't have to be a mushroom cloud. It's 10% at the time. It's 5%. It's whatever you can get done, but keep moving. It's just like my tattoo right here. Kaizen. Every day, grind it out, measure it, tweak it, grind it out. And I use grind in a love term. That's a term of endearment for me because I love to grind. I really do. As we're wrapping this puppy up, because life is what life is and everybody's got to go, but tell us how everybody can get in touch with you. What's the best way to follow along with what you're doing or hire you even better?
You can get in touch with me on our websites, thinkmovethrive.com, thinkmovethrive. And we are very active on that in terms of hosting all kinds of content, blogs and podcasts, all that stuff for that, all around coaching, development and culture. And so if that's something you're interested in there, you can also go to Amazon, and we've just launched a new book. It's called Lift. Is all about culture and how you strengthen or create culture in your organization or your team. So if you're managing a team or if you're leading an organization, then I strongly suggest Lift, because it is not a theoretical thing. Sometimes culture gets a little theoretical. This is three main ideas that you can take and start using immediately. Some are very intuitive and some are a little surprising, I think. But the good news is, if you hate reading, this is the book for you, because it's a business fable and who doesn't like stories? So we created this to be an easy read that anybody could pick up, because some people don't like to read books. If you do like to read, you're going to really, really enjoy some of the concepts that we unpack about culture. So yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, very active on LinkedIn, and Think, Move, Thrive. So Thank you again for having me on the show.
I can't believe how much Gabby's talked and dominated the conversation today. She's a good sport. She lets us go, and then she keeps us corralled when we need to be corralled. But you brought some really good points today. You brought some clarity, a couple of items I had jotted down, which really helped, and I appreciate your personal touch on that. Really good stuff. We've got to get together at first of the year. I'm going to come up there, come up Highway 25, and we'll meet up there at the cliffs and have lunch or something one day. So
that sounds good. I'd love it.
Well, Gabby, there you go. All that hard work you've done, and I didn't see any eye rolling or anything today, so I think you tolerated us well today.
She's been all smiles. All smiles today.
She's a sport, I'm telling you. Well, why don't you go ahead and get us headed toward the house. Busy afternoon for sure. Busy time of year. I got to go get my stocking stuff ready for the wife.
So. As Greg was saying, Dallas, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure listening to kind of the wealth of knowledge that you have packed inside your brain and obtained over the years from your own experiences, as well as I'm sure other people's experiences. It's very cool to hear about, you know, your story and how you got to where you are, as well as, you know, hear about your books. That's very exciting. I'm definitely going to check out Lift. So again, thank you so much for coming and talking to us today. As for everyone else, thank you for joining us for an episode of Straight Outta Crumpton. For more episodes like this, don't forget to subscribe to Apple or Spotify podcasts. And don't forget to check out gregcrumpton.com for all of your Greg Crumpton content.
This is Straight Outta Crumpton with your host, Greg Crumpton.